This episode is brought to you by Factor. Do you struggle to find the time and energy to consistently eat healthy? You're not alone, and there's a solution. Introducing Factor, the all-in-one meal delivery service that preps, cooks, and delivers fresh, not frozen, fully prepared meals directly to your door weekly. With Factor, every meal is designed by dietitians and handcrafted by world-class chefs, keeping your taste buds happy and your waistline trim. What's more, the menu changes every week, so you never lose interest in eating healthy. Right now, Factor is offering listeners of The Slop Drop $50 off over their first 2 weeks. Just go to factor75.com, pick your meals, and use promo code PODCAST50, that's PODCAST50, at checkout to claim this limited-time offer. That's factor75.com, factor75.com, promo code PODCAST50 for $50 off over your first 2 weeks. Whether you're quarantined in the house or not, you still don't want your gym bag being all nasty. Our sponsor today, Manscaped, is here to make sure your stuff stays in check. Manscaped promotes clean hygiene when it comes to your junk thanks to their Lawnmower 3.0. Manscaped is the only men's brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming. While you're probably at home looking for something to do, why not make manscaping a part of your new routine? You don't want to look like you're sitting on Ming's shoulders from WCW. And you don't want Brutus the Barber Beefcake chomping away down there. And you dang sure don't want to use that Freebird hair removal cream. Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0. Precision engineered tools for your family jewels. The Perfect Package 3.0 kit comes with new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, waterproof, cordless body trimmer, and a ton of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. This third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. Your goods are going to be nick free thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin safe technology. Inside the Perfect Package, you'll also find the Manscaped Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing deodorant and moisturizer. You're probably sitting on the couch like Al Bundy right now anyway, so you might as well keep everything smooth and fresh. Subscribe to the Perfect Package to get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months, making sure your trimmer stays fresh and clean. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. This is the perfect package for your perfect package. Get 20% off and free shipping with code SLOPDROP at manscaped.com. That's SLOPDROP, SLOPDROP. Do yourself a favor and always use the right tools for the job. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com by using the promo code SLOPDROP, SLOPDROP.
That's a slop drop. I can answer that. That's a slop drop. What is that move? That's a slop drop.
Slop drop time. That's a slop drop. Oh, that is a slop drop. That's a slop drop.
Slop drop, slop drop.
Slop drop.
The slop drop indeed.
What's up, humanoids? Welcome back to the Slop Drop. This is Nathan Rogers at WooPigSumo on Twitter. And we are joined by the voice of the Twin Lake Sports Network. The Loose Cannon and the Twin Lake Sports Network is the only place to get your local sports in the Ozarks. The Loose Cannon himself, David McBee.
And I'm glad to be back. I think it's been about 12 episodes since I've been on. So, shout out to Stephen E, man. I've loved listening to Stephen E. And of course, Dave Chapman, the unluckiest man in the world, also known as Evad. They've done a fantastic job. I was looking forward to getting to the stars just never aligned for me or Stephen E or Evad to get on, but maybe one of these days we'll get on together.
I know we've had crazy schedules, COVID issues. I've had coronavirus. You've had coronavirus. I'm telling you, if Bad Luck Chapman gets it, he may be over.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen, but speaking of over, tonight we're going to talk about a show that was definitely not over. In fact, I think it was the beginning of the end of good old WCW, but I'm glad to be back.
To get some cheap plugs out of the way, of course, we're on Facebook, Twitter, all major podcast platforms. If you want to watch us on YouTube, you can see our ugly mugs, but you will not get the awesome audio clips. If you listen to us on whatever podcast platform you choose to,
You will get to hear audio clips that is related to this very event, but you won't get to see our ugly mug. So pick your poison, do both, doesn't matter. We're free either way. Also, I'm aware that another popular podcast covered the same topic a few days ago, but this is something we put out on Twitter last week. You guys voted for it, so we're going to go ahead and go through with it. And like Dave said, probably the end of the era here. 21 years ago this week, WCW Starrcade, December 19th, 1999, from MCI Center in Washington, D.C. I've read where there's about 11,790 people in attendance, but only 8,582 paid, making it, they made $362,550 at the gate. I've also read where there's anywhere from 120 to 145,000 pay-per-view buys. That might sound like a lot, but back then, wasn't good, Dave.
Well, it's crazy because the last episode I was on, we were in the fall of 1995. WCW Nitro just kicked off. Lex Luger, with that horrendous shirt that he wore on that night, kicked off the Monday Night Wars. And man, looking back, it's like 95, 96, 97, 98. WCW was just absolutely on fire. I mean, at one time, they were beating the WWF 83 weeks in a row. And then it's like as soon as it hit 99, the bottom just fell out. And when they got to this right here, they were trying something new. They had just brought in a new booker, which we'll talk more about. But I mean, you know, I was thinking back to some of the classic Starrcades, like, you know, 97, I know, gets beat up because of the Sting Hogan main event. That was just 2 years before this, and you have like 19,000 people. But I mean, you think about it, you've dropped from 19,000 to like 8,000 in a 2 year period. You had over a million buys in 97, and then you're talking, what did you just say, 120,000?
120 to 145,000. I've read two different things, but still, let's say it was 145,000 buys. Opposed to a million, that's couch change.
I mean, how could you fall that far, that fast? And I think we'll kind of figure out why they fell so far and so fast tonight.
This was the 17th edition of Starrcade, which had always been considered WCW's WrestleMania. I think you just called it the granddaddy of them all. There would only be one more after this before it was purchased by the WWE. Vince Russo had just left the WWF and taken over WCW Creative about 2 months before this. And this event had his fingerprints all over it, and we will get into that. Commentators going into this event, Tony Schiavone, Scott Hudson, and Bobby the Brain Heenan. Interviewers was Mike Tenay and Mean Gene Okerlund. I don't know why they had Hudson and Tenay swapped. Typically, Tenay would be on the pay-per-view and Hudson would be doing the interview, so I'm not sure why they had it set up this way tonight, but Bobby Heenan just wasn't himself.
You know why they switched him up. Come on, bro. Come on, bro. You know why they switched him up, bro.
I think that has to do with, you know, Bobby Heenan, he just was not himself on this night, and after watching it, I really don't blame him. Ultimately, he was released less than a year later. Champions going into this event, the world champion was Bret the Hitman Hart. The United States champion was Scott Hall. The TV title had been vacated by Scott Hall. The tag team champions was the Outsiders, Hall and Nash. Cruiserweight champion was Evan Courageous. And the hardcore champion was Norman Smiley, or Smiley as Scott Hudson kept calling him. So if you think about it, going into this event, Scott Hall technically had three titles. He had the tag title, the U.S. title, and the TV title that he'd actually vacated by throwing it in a trash can backstage. Hacksaw Jim Duggan later ended up picking that up. That's a totally different show. But as you mentioned earlier, bro, I'm starting to see some signs already.
I mean, the names you mentioned, you know, those are all big names that a couple of years earlier were just white hot. And, you know, Russo, of course, Russo comes in, I think it was September of 99. I'm just going off the top of my head. But right around that time period, he came in. And there was a lot of excitement when he first came in because, you know, at the beginning of the year, they were pretty close in ratings. And then it's just where the WWF was taken off. WCW was going the other way. But I got a bone to pick with Russo because Russo always, on his podcast, bro, he always talks, bro, about how when he took over, they only had a 2.5 rating, bro. And by the time he left, they were having a 3.5 rating, bro. And let me tell you something, bro. That was not correct. The week before he came in, they did this like best of tag teams or someone correct me. I'm sure Russo, when he sees this, is going to correct me.
Russo does follow us on Twitter, by the way.
But you can't say, well, they were 2.5 and then 3.5. It was a 1 week big dip in the ratings. It wasn't like they were averaging, 2.5 and all that. But I mean, he came in and he was, hey, I'm going to push the young guys. I think morale in the locker room was pretty good with Russo there. The young guys were pumped up. Hey, we're getting a chance. You know, some of the other guys that maybe have been there for a long time, like Lex Luger, and I'm doing my Lex Luger point for those that can see. You can't see because I got background. I got to put it right in front of me. It looks like I'm holding a gun. But, the veterans wasn't a fan of him, but he was trying to make it work. And when he first came in, I wanted him to make it work. I wanted it to get white hot with both sides again. Unfortunately, it just ended up becoming WWE Lite or WWF Lite at the time.
The event starts off with a few videos building up Starrcade and recapping some of the matches that would be taking place tonight. Tony Schiavone then opens the show.
From the MCI Center in the nation's capital, ladies and gentlemen, the very last wrestling pay-per-view of the century is off and running. Welcome to the 17th edition of Starrcade. World Championship Wrestling brings you
first match of the night, the Mamalukes, which was Big Vito and Johnny the Bull, with Tony Marinara defeated Disco Inferno and Lash LaRue by pinfall after Disco accidentally gave Lash LaRue the last dance, which was a stunner, and then Big Vito planted LaRue with a DDT for the win.
He got Lash LaRue!
He didn't know! He didn't know!
And a big DDT on Lash!
Well, Lash knows that, I'll guarantee you!
We got a three count of
something!
Well, the Mamalukes, I actually kind of liked them when they first debuted. I was like, man, they're going to have a little bit of potential. Then they ended up kind of becoming a comedy thing. And with Tony Marinara, they just went way too far. But, you look at, they gave this match 9 minutes and 40 seconds. Someone tell me why. Why? Someone explain why 9 minutes and 40 seconds. A Disco Inferno match. You know, you have all these other matches. You got 13 matches on this card. And looking at it, what was the third or fourth longest match of the night out of 13 cards? You got world championship matches that go, 12 minutes, and we're going to go almost 10 minutes for Disco Inferno. I mean, I look back at the other Starrcades. Usually Starrcades always started off that first match. They'd have a Dean Malenko or Rey Mysterio or that great Cruiserweight match and give them 20 minutes. Instead, we get the Mamalukes and Disco, sorry, weak start.
And Lash LaRue, baby.
Oh, yeah, Lash LaRue. He did have some of the sweetest chops, though. I know he used to have the pork chop sideburns that were pretty sweet back then.
Shaved
in the day.
Into an L. Well, Johnny the Bull was WCW Hardcore Champion at one time, a two-time WCW Tag Champ, and a three-time WWE Hardcore Champ. He did have a little stunt in WWF or WWE. Big Vito, a two-time WCW Tag Champ, and a two-time WCW Hardcore Champ, Lash LaRue, former WCW Tag Champ, and then Disco Inferno. He held the Cruiserweight title, Tag title, TV title. Not a great gimmick, but you got to give credit where credit is due. He did his best to make it work. I'm sure he didn't go into WCW saying, you know what? I want to be the Disco Inferno. Give me a disco gimmick.
Well, I mean, the credit to Disco, he tried to get it over. He did everything he could to get it over. He was part of some bad storyline. You know, he had that period where, they wanted him to lose to, I can't even remember who that was now. Oh, Jackie Moore. They kept wanting him to lose to Jackie Moore. And so he ended up leaving for a period of time because he refused to do the job. Then they bring him back. First thing they do, have him lose to Jackie Moore. It's like, it was almost like it was a rib on him. But, I thought Disco had some, I thought he was entertaining. I think if he would have been in the WWF at this time, I think he totally would have got over. He would have been a character that, I mean, if you can get over Saturn with a mop, you can get over the Disco Inferno.
Tony Schiavone then announced that the ladder match for the United States title between Scott Hall and Chris Benoit was canceled due to Hall being injured. Furthermore, Hall would be stripped of the title and it would be awarded to Benoit due to forfeiture. Benoit comes out and says titles should be earned, not given. and as far as he's concerned, the title was vacant and issued an open challenge for the vacant title.
WCW's executive committee stated that because Scott Hall is unable to wrestle tonight, not only does he forfeit the ladder match, but along with it, forfeits the U.S. heavyweight title, which in turn makes me the new U.S. heavyweight champion. You know, in my opinion, titles aren't to be given. They're to be won. The Crippler's got a motto. Sweat more in peacetime, bleed less during war. I came to D.C. tonight to kick some ass. You all came here tonight to see a ladder match for the U.S. heavyweight title. In my opinion, this title is vacant. But what I'm going to do is issue an open challenge to anyone sitting in the locker room that wants to fight for the pride, the prestige, and the notoriety of being the U.S. heavyweight champion. But if you want to get to the top of the WCW tonight, you're going to have to climb over the Crippler.
Well, this whole, I mean, it's just so convoluted. It was just so much stuff going on. As a viewer, it's hard to keep up with all this. And I think that was too much. I know that was the era of, it's Crash TV and all that kind of stuff. But, man, just too much.
Yeah, I mean,
I got lost with you just explaining all the stipulations.
We're not even to the second match yet, and this is what's crazy about when you cover something that Russo's did. There's so many moving parts that it's hard to keep up. But second match of the night, Medusa defeated Evan Courageous by pinfall after a bridging German suplex to become the new WCW Cruiserweight Champion. Spice, who was also a Nitro girl, had been with Courageous as kind of a little couple there, turned on Evan during the match and sort of give him a low blow, allowing Medusa to hit the finish. And I say sort of because she more or less just grabbed his junk real quick. And then Medusa gives him the German, gets the win, becomes the first female WCW Cruiserweight Champion. Again, Russo imitating WWE. China, I believe, had a title by this time, and he was bringing it to WCW.
Well, I'm not a big fan of the intergender thing, but I think the story, you know, they actually made the match where it was believable that she had to basically, you know, have someone help cheat and do a low blow to help him win. I know Medusa in her Hall of Fame speech, she threw a shout out to Evan Courageous for doing something like that, which it was groundbreaking, especially in WCW, but I mean, it was just, 3 minutes and 32 seconds, and that's the Cruiserweight. And just think, 3-4 years earlier, you got Mysterio, Jericho. I mean, think
Eddie
about
Guerrero,
some of the stuff they were doing.
Dean Malenko.
Guerrero. Yeah, I mean Malenko was 97 PWI Wrestler of the Year. You know, it's like you got all these great Cruiserweight guys that would put on all these great Cruiserweight matches, and then biggest granddaddy of them all, it's the WrestleMania of WCW. Let's give him 3 minutes and 30 seconds and then have Medusa win it. Think about Medusa, man. It's like, what? It had been 4 years since she had come over. Right about this time, 4 years earlier, she was dropping the title in the garbage. And that was a moment. But it's like they could never figure out what to do with Medusa. But, hey, was it me or when you watched the replay, was Tony Schiavone breathing heavy on this?
Probably was. It was a Medusa, so he's probably, you know, his heart was pumping a little harder there.
I mean, I thought I heard some pretty deep breaths, and I don't know, but, you know, we'd have to ask Shiv on that. So someone tag in, what is it, Tony Schiavone 24 at whatever. Tag in Tony Schiavone, ask him, was he breathing heavy? Because I swear I heard him taking some really deep breaths on during that match.
Well, like I said, he was probably trying to contain himself because Medusa was in there moving around some, so probably got his heart pumping a little extra hard. Me and Gene Arklin interviewed the WCW Hardcore Champion Norman Smiley before his title defense against Ming. Smiley says that he wasn't scared, but then screamed when he saw a backstage producer. Smiley then turned around and asked Mean Gene if he had soiled himself, and Mean Gene graciously took a look and said, yes, he did.
Norman Smiley, in just a few moments, right here tonight at Starrcade, you are going to be defending the WCW Hardcore title. Now, at the risk of sounding negative, I get the impression that you are afraid of me. You're frightened.
Afraid? Frightened? I wouldn't say frightened. Cautious? Yes. Weary? Absolutely. But I'm not scared, and I'm going to let...
Whoa, wait a minute. Norman, that's just the producer trying to count you out of the interview. You got to settle down.
He shouldn't make any sudden moves like that. I'm a coil spring waiting to explode. And tonight, Ming's going to find that out. Are we off yet?
Of course we're off.
Hey, Mr. Producer, I'm talking to you. Don't make any more sudden moves like that. Almost soiled my pants. Am I okay back to you?
Oh, you did.
Really?
This was the third match. Norman Smiley defeated Ming to retain the WCW Hardcore title. For some reason, Fit Finlay and Brian Knobbs come out, beat up Ming while Smiley's hiding under some tables. Finlay wrapped a lead pipe around Ming's back, leaves him laying, and then they just leave for some reason. Smiley emerges to steal the pin and retains the title.
He's gone through Finlay. He's gone through Finlay. He took a look like a lead pipe and bent it across his back.
Boy, he bent that. Look at that.
He's out. Ming is out.
Smiley, is he going to luck his way into it? Look at that. Double checking.
He's going to cover him. 1, 2, 3, and Norman wins and runs away.
Norman has left the building.
Well, man, of course, Ming, you're talking about one of the toughest dudes in all of pro wrestling history. I mean, they could pretty much, everyone I think has pretty much said he could beat up anyone. The legit tough dude. And I think everyone knew back then he was legit tough. And then you got screaming Norman Smiley, who was probably one of the most entertaining characters of this 99-2000. What's funny is he's a real technical wrestler. You know, I've heard Jericho and a lot of guys talk to him, and I think he even helps out some with the performance.
Yeah.
You know, really good technical wrestler. We never saw it because all we saw was screaming Norman Smiley. And I mean, he made it interesting. It was trash, but
it was. And I know Mink would absolutely destroy him, but it was entertaining and it was kind of funny. It's so funny when he starts screaming.
Yeah, he was screaming. It, to me, the match time was right. This was like 4 minutes long. That's right. But does this need to really be on a Starrcade? That's my only question. I mean, this just screamed a Thursday Night Thunder match to me.
I will say, you know, he's contributed a lot in the business. I talked to Vampiro, I think it was last summer, maybe. And one of the questions I asked, because you always hear about people, you know, dogging others. And I said, is there anybody in the business that you could still call up today, you know, would be there for you? And he said, Norman Smiley. I thought that was pretty cool.
I think that's real cool. I mean, I like Norman Smiley. I'm just glad he got a push. And because he had done so much in Mexico for so long, and you know, I'm glad he got an opportunity to make some good money for a couple years. And he's a guy who's still contributing to the sport today.
After the match, Ming put the Tongan death grip on referee Nick Patrick. We then see several different backstage segments. This is this, you know, what'd you call it earlier? Crash TV. So much going on. We see somebody deliver David Flair a crowbar wrapped in a gift box. We see Oklahoma giving Dr. Death Steve Williams a pep talk. And then he gets kidnapped by the Misfits. And then prior to the fourth match, Mike Tenay interviewed Hacksaw Jim Duggan on his upcoming match against The Revolution.
But you know what? We still don't have any idea who those
That's
three
right,
mystery
Mike.
Partners are.
That's why it's called a mystery. I can't tell you, but I'll tell you this. All three of them are true blue Americans, just like Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Hey, but you got to excuse me now, Mike, because I have to go out and defend our country.
So Hacksaw just came back.
Oh, bro, my head hurts.
Legitimately beat.
I can't keep up.
Legitimately beat cancer. And, of course, is a big name. So what do? They bring him back and make him the WCW janitor. And here he is feuding with The Revolution, which was Dean Malenko, Perry Saturn, Shane Douglas, and Asia, which was their version of China, their knockoff generic version of China. Duggan will have three mystery partners. If Duggan if he wins, the revolution has to become the janitors, basically. If he loses, then he has to denounce the USA. Leads to the fourth match. Revolution, again, Malenko, Saturn, and Douglas in Asia, defeated Jim Duggan, and his mystery partners were the Varsity Club, Kevin Sullivan, Mike Rotunda, and Rick Steiner. Kevin Sullivan hadn't competed on a WCW pay-per-view since 1997. Duggan wouldn't tag any of the Varsity Club members, which apparently ticked them off, so they storm the ring and just attack everybody. For whatever reason, Shane Douglas was on commentary. After Duggan gets laid out, he runs in and makes the pin.
Shane Douglas makes the cover. One, two, three. It's over. It's over. I can't believe it. It's over.
That really happened. That match, I mean, we didn't make that up. That was a legitimate match. You bring back the Varsity Club after 10 years, and let's do a 4 minute and 53 second match where they really basically don't do anything the whole time.
And I love the faction, the Varsity Club. Now, at this point in time, it was a little bit past their prime, but that gimmick, that group could still work today with some modern wrestlers. But come on, Kevin Sullivan's, and he didn't need to be in there. Mike Rotunda actually looked pretty good, and of course Rick Steiner. But like you said, you bring them back, and I don't know what happened to him after this match, to be honest with you.
Well, I think if you look at this, you know, you got Malenko and Saturn, part of the Revolution. Within a couple months, they're going to be in the WWF. Debuting as the Radicals. Shane Douglas tried to go with them, but they kind of left him hanging on that one. I mean, so much talent in here. Kevin Sullivan, Mike Rotunda, Rick Steiner. I mean, you got all this talent in here, 4 minutes and 53 seconds, and it makes no sense. You got Shane Douglas, who's on commentary during the match, and he jumps in and gets the pin real quick. I need some Excedrin, man. This is making my head hurt. Bro, too much.
I read somewhere if Scott Hudson only knew he could do that, he would have been a world champion, because he said, you know, in commentary and watched so many matches, if he knew he could just jump in and pin somebody, he could have been a champion.
Well, do you kind of get the feeling on this show that it was like, hey, let's try to get as many guys a payday as we possibly can, bro, and if everyone's getting paid, bro, it'll all be good, bro. I mean, I kind of feel like that was the booking. And hey, I'm not anti-Russo. I'm not like Jim Cornette and Russo, you know, the anger in them. I mean, I like Russo. Some of the things he did was great. But I'm going to say too, like, this show, man, this was tough to watch. Yeah. And it's even tough to keep track of. We're on match four. I'm exhausted.
For the next match, the Misfits had locked Oklahoma in a shark cage to ensure he didn't run away. Vampiro defeated Dr. Dusty Williams by disqualification. Williams continued to pummel Vampiro despite warnings by the ref Charles Robinson. Doc then grabbed Charles Robinson, threw him down, getting DQ'd.
That's it. Hey, he put his hands on Dr. Death. He put his hands on. What the hell is that?
That's a disqualification, I do believe.
What the hell is that?
Therefore, since he lost, Vampiro gets time with Oklahoma in the ring. They actually forgot he was locked in the cage, and eventually Doug Dillinger came out, let him out, and then he goes right for Vampiro, which immediately starts the sixth match. Vampiro defeated Oklahoma by pinfall.
There it is! Nail in the coffin, Tony!
That's his move! He sits on one, two, three, and he went to...
After a nail in the coffin, a confused Charles Robinson made the three count. This was another cluster. I hated them making fun of Jim Ross. I hated what they did with Dr. Death Steve Williams. And to me, it's just more spitballing and grasping for straws by Russo to poke fun of the WWE and mimic some of the stuff they've done in the past.
Well, Vampiro in 99, of course, you know, he came in, I think, maybe late 98. And the fans were behind Vampiro. He was getting over. And it seemed like he was ready to start really going to the next level. But the crowd was really digging him. And his character, you know, I love Vampiro. But, you know, Dr. Death Steve Williams, unfortunately, you know, that whole – he just never recovered from the Brawl for All. I know you guys have, you know, done recaps about Dr. Death and one of the greats of all time. The Oklahoma thing, you know, that was just crossing the line.
It was very distasteful and disrespectful.
I mean, yeah, to me, Jim Ross is the voice of professional wrestling to me. You know, I still listen to his podcast on a weekly basis. He, you know, I buy his sauce. I love his barbecue sauce. Tell anyone, check it out, jrbbq.com. Great stuff. I just tried out his seasoning. So someone tag in JR. I can give him some feedback, man. His seasoning is awesome. I just ordered a few more. He's got some great deals going on right now for Christmas, like, you know, 40-50% off on things. So I've stocked up on my JR stuff.
Listen, haven't read his latest book, it's a good read. I have read his new book.
Yeah, great read. And JR's just, you know, he is the voice of wrestling to me. And this just really crossed the line. I thought it was distasteful. You know, I know that was kind of the era where, hey, let's make fun of as much stuff as we can. You got people giving birth to a hand and all sorts of crazy stuff. But this was just going too far. And it's just sad. I mean, you know, why not just let Dr. Death and Vampiro just have a straight up match? You know, you can play on, hey, Dr. Death, legit athlete at University of Oklahoma, bad dude. And if you want to have him lose clean. Get Vampiro over and, you know, build up Vampiro. Hey, you just took down one of the baddest dudes on the planet instead of throwing in all this other crazy stuff. And I think Vampiro was just misused. And, you know, Vampiro, you know, I know you got a chance to interview him. Great guy.
Yeah, he told me he was actually in line for a title win, but somebody in the back nixed that, brother. He didn't mention any names.
I don't think that works for me, brother.
I don't know. You know, at the time he was telling me the story, that's the first person I thought of. That don't work for me, brother. But after you and I talked earlier about somebody, you know, it could have been somebody else.
You know, I got a feeling it. You know, it was someone who you know was part of, you know, a clique. And is one of Scott Hall's best friends. That's who I would probably say was. I mean, well, you look at Vampiro right before, you know, they did the reboot. It was February and March. He was getting a huge push. And then, you know, Russo and Bischoff, they tried rebooting it. And, I mean, that was, you know, you had Nash, right, and really heavily involved in a lot of stuff. I can see that probably being a Nash or whatever, but... I mean, Vampiro, I think he's a legend, did a lot of great stuff too with Lucha Underground. And, you know, I know he's had some, you know, some health things that he's dealing with. And I just hope he recovers and everything, you know, can work out well for him. But, I mean, great guy, Dr. Death. You know, I love listening. You could tell with JR the passion he has for Dr. Death, man. I mean, that was his guy, that was his friend. And, hate to see, you know, you were talking about Varsity Club a little while ago. You know, that group in the late 80s, that was legit. You got Dr. Death. He's legit. And then to have him playing these crazy things, just so out of place.
Yeah. So a few weeks prior to Starrcade, Curt Hennig lost in a retirement match. Yet here he is about to compete in the seventh match of the card. There was some tension within Harlem Heat amongst Stevie Ray and Booker T since they added Midnight, who was a female wrestler / valet for them at the time. Stevie Ray said he was not going to have his brothers back tonight. Apparently, a six-person intergender match was about to determine the number one contenders for the WCW tag team titles between Harlem Heat and Creative Control. Tell me how that makes sense.
Any last minute suggestions, anything you need specifically before we go out tonight?
What are you talking about, Kurt?
Talking about our match, our title.
Oh, that's right. Look, guys, man, I apologize. My head's someplace else. There's something big going down tonight. Look, just go out there, take care of business. Become the number one contenders. Good luck.
Thanks for coming.
Harlem Heat, tonight you're taking on Creative Control to determine the number one contenders to the WCW World Tag Team titles. However, it seems that as of late, there's a little friction between the three of you.
You know, listen, Mike, straight up, Harlem Heat and Midnight. See, we're in this thing together, and as far as problems go, ain't no problem. That's just a rumor. If you...
Why don't you tell it like it is? Don't sugarcoat it, brother. Why don't you tell it like it is? You know, everything was okay to this overbearing, hard-head grandstander guy with the group. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know what I ever did to you, but if you have something to say to me, say it to my face.
Look, man, me and you have been up and down the road. We have fought our way to the top. We done did everything we had to do in this business. But you know what? Tonight, I ain't watching your back tonight.
What?
talking about, man. Come back here.
We all know who Kurt Hennig is. We all know who Harlem Heat is. Midnight was actually a female bodybuilder and a product of the WCW power plant. Creative Control was the Harris twins, Ron and Don. Here they're called Gerald and Patrick, another WWE cheap shot, portraying Gerald Briscoe and the late Pat Patterson. Creative Control and Kurt Hennig defeated Harlem Heat and Midnight by pinfall to become the number one contenders to Hall and Nash's tag titles.
Kurt Hennig's got something on his hand.
One, the only one out, whatever it was. Got him right in the back of the ear.
Something taped up.
Look at the left hand of Kurt Hennig. Shane gave him a set of brass knucks.
Well, you don't know what's in there. It's tape.
Look at the argument going on the floor. Meanwhile, we've got a count in the ring. That is it. This match is over. And Creative Control will win the match. Don't even know what contender. As Midnight left her argument with CeeDee Ray and went in to check on Booker T.
Kurt Hennig came in, hits Booker T with a foreign object. They get the win for his team. Again, six-person intergender tag match to determine the tag titles. Again, how does that make sense?
I mean, it makes no sense. And, I mean, you got Kurt Hennig, you know, one of the greats of all time. You got Booker T, WWE Hall of Famer. I mean, you know, in Harlem Heat, you know, I think you could legitimately argue that they're one of the greatest tag teams of all time. And you're going to put them in this complete cluster, and you have, you know, Booker T and Stevie Ray, who's been all through all these wars together. But, you know, Midnight's going to be the one that breaks them up. I mean, it was just so convoluted. And it's sad because you look at the talent there, man. I mean, this roster was stacked. No matter how you say it, this roster could deliver. They just needed some direction, and the direction they were going in, you know, there's a reason why the WWF was working at the time. They could do crazy stuff, but you had The Rock and you had Stone Cold. You know, Main Event, you know, you got Triple H. Main Event, they're going 20 minutes and they're going to tell a story in the ring. You know, they would have a lot of little 4 or 5 minute, you know, matches that wasn't great, but, you know, it still made sense, a lot of the direction, the storytelling they were doing. And with this one, it's just like there was no filter. It was just Russo gone wild.
Mike Tenay interviewed Dustin Rhodes prior to his bunkhouse brawl match with Jeff Jarrett. Dustin said he would do this for his father's honor and then was attacked by Jeff Jarrett, which leads to the next match. Jeff Jarrett defeated Dustin Rhodes in a bunkhouse brawl match by pinfall. Kurt Hennig comes out and assists Jarrett. Jarrett jumps off the ladder for the upcoming U.S. title match. He hit Dustin with a guitar and scores a victory.
Up there on that ladder with the guitar.
Uh-oh. And Dustin does not realize what's going on behind
him. Play me some sweet music.
He does now, though, but it's too late.
A 2-for-1 guitar shot.
1, 2, 3. Jeff Jarrett wins.
Not a bad match.
I mean, you know, the time was about right. It looks like they went 11 minutes. Dustin Rhodes... You know, did you watch AEW last week?
I did.
Yeah, did you catch the, you know, they're trying to get him to this, whatever that group is. I'm not as much up on AEW as I should be, but the Dark Order, they're trying to get him. And he can join them as number as 7.
Yeah.
I mean, I marked out when I saw that. I was actually in the kitchen washing dishes, and I heard him say that you have to come in as 7. I was like, whoa. There's a little bit of a story behind that, you know.
Yeah,
so,
a lot of younger fans may not understand that, but yeah, that was pretty creative and smart, I thought.
Yeah, so look up all those younger fans who are like, what in the world are you talking about or didn't get it? Just go Google WCW 7 debut, and it'll make a lot of sense for you. But I really thought that was cool. But Dustin Rhodes, man, he's still working now. He looks good. I mean, you know, he looks better now than he did in 99. And Jeff Jarrett, you know, he's Double J. I wonder about this time if he's thinking I should have stayed in the WWF. But, you know, it all ended up working out.
Backstage, Mean Gene Okerlund interviewed DDP about his upcoming Crowbar on a Pole match against David Flair.
I'm in Dallas Page. Your problems with David Flair perhaps are going to be coming to a head tonight. Now, with that crowbar on a pole, the first superstar to reach it literally gets to use it on his opponent.
You know, all I keep hearing is poor David Flair. He's got problems. He doesn't know what he's doing. You know what I got to say about that, Gino?
This kid is not wrapped too tight, you know that.
Whatever. He does have problems. Bottom line is this. Any guy wants to take after me with a crowbar and try to put Diamond Dallas Page out and then stalk my wife, he's got problems? You're damn right he does. And tonight that rat bastard's going to find out that DDP is going to have that crowbar in his hands. That's right, in these hands, it will have the king of bada bing, bada boom, bada bang!
The first person that retrieved the crowbar could use it on their opponent. Ninth match of the night, Diamond Dallas Page defeated David Flair by pinfall with a diamond cutter.
Keep it on. He's going for it. Now he realizes he should have got it before. And he's right. Oh, he is so dangerous with that crowbar. There it is. Now he can use it. Oh, swinging wildly. And big diamond cutter. Holy smoke, out of nowhere. Never saw it coming. So quick. Put it on. In a cover. Two. It's over.
Flair actually grabbed the crowbar first, but was immediately hit with a diamond cutter and pinned. Afterwards, Page hit Flair with another diamond cutter off the top rope. We then see the debut of Daphne, who was David Flair's stalker. She ran in and stops DDP from further beating up on David. This was not good, honestly. There was really no point in having a crowbar on a pole because nobody even used it. As soon as David Flair grabbed it, he gets, you know, the diamond cutter and pinned. At this point, DDP had been a two-time WCW World Champion, and here he is on a crowbar on a pole match.
Well, I'm sure DDP was saying, hey, I only got to work 3 minutes and 53 seconds, and then I get the rest of the night to go hang out with Kimberly. So he definitely made out tonight. David Flair, I did like when he did, you know, his psycho crazy character. I mean, David Flair could never work in the ring, and unfortunately, you know, following the Nate, I mean, that's just a shadow you can't overcome. But I like the character development that would happen months after this with the crazy. I mean, he played a great psycho. I mean, but yeah, David Flair, and I know he gets so much props because, I mean, think about it. I think it was, you know, Stacy Keibler. You know, was it Tori too? I'm trying to remember.
No, that was Kidman with Tori, but okay, Stacy so, Keibler. So that's enough.
I mean, just for Stacy Keibler's right there, props to David Flair. Congratulations. You are the man. You're a living legend.
Well, Sting and Luger had been feuding for a little while. Elizabeth has tried to she tried to spray Sting with some mace, but hit Luger instead. That led to Liz and Lex breaking up and Sting taking Elizabeth under his wing to kind of protect her. This leads to the 10th match. Sting defeated the total package Lex Luger by disqualification after Elizabeth nailed Sting with his baseball bat.
Oh, hot mace!
Sting! Sting has turned the tables and look at her face!
A silly string, isn't it? He knew it! He knew it all along. Going up! Oh, he is energized now. The Stinger perched high atop the MCI Center. He's just fighting for pride and fighting for the victory right here. We know where Elizabeth will end up. She turned on Sting, but Sting saw it coming.
Scorpion Deathlock!
Can he get it on Luger with those powerful legs, though?
Oh!
Oh my God! Oh, she clocked him right in the face, right in the jaw.
We're tricking Sting all along. Elizabeth tried to spray Sting with some mace again, but he'd swapped out the cans and it was silly string. During the finish, Sting goes to put Luger in the Scorpion Deathlock. Elizabeth blasts him with a bat, getting DQ'd and ending the match.
They got all that done in 5 minutes and 31 seconds. That's some quick work in there. I mean, man, just thinking back, you know, Sting, his early 90s run, how big he was. Luger had been world champion late 97, you know, of course, Sting, you know, defeated Hogan and through, you know, 98 was the champ quite a bit. And this is where we're at, a 5 minute, 30 second match at Starrcade.
Luger was jacked during this match.
Yeah, Luger, I mean, like when you think probably, you know, he had his character in the World Bodybuilding Federation and, you know, the WBF and then as the narcissist and all that. But honestly, this is probably the biggest that he looked. He was, you know, and I'm sure he probably had some assistance to help him get jacked like that. But man, he was, yeah. Maybe that's why he was wore out after a minute and 30 seconds. because he was gassed right off the bat. And Sting, I mean, this match could have been so much more. You could have played up on the friendship they've had since the late 80s and all that kind of stuff, all the things they've done together. You know, 2 years earlier, you know, Sting wins the belt. Who's picking him up? Lex Luger on his shoulder. You know, I mean, you could have really played on that. And instead, it's this craziness with Liz. And Liz definitely should be a WWE Hall of Famer, one of the greatest valets of all time. But getting her physically involved was always just, to me, very awkward.
What do you think about Luger? Should he be in the Hall of Fame?
I mean, I think Luger, yeah. I think Luger deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I think, you know, he's a multi-time, you know, WCW heavyweight champion when it was really meant something to be WCW champion. I mean, Booker T's five-time champ, but I think he had, what, a total of, like, you know, 100 days reign. Luger, I mean, when he was with Harley Race in the early 90s, I mean, he had a really good run. You know, he was part of the Horsemen. I mean, you know, him and
tag titles,
him and Sting. He was part of the Wolf Pack. I mean, he was involved in some big things. You know, the Yokozuna thing on the Intrepid, picking him up, the body slam, the Lex Express.
Shocking appearance on Nitro.
Yeah, the shock. I mean, honestly, that's what kicked off the war. I mean, you think about it. I mean, Luger should be a Hall of Famer. I know years after this, he would spiral out of control where, you know, he was on the verge of death, you know, and paralysis. He's fought his way back, you know. Now, it's funny because if you I'm a Van Halen fan, so I'm still trying to get over Eddie passing away. Lex Luger and David Lee Roth look like the same person. So I someone listening to the show, go and Google a picture of David Lee Roth, you know, and, you know, recently, and Lex Luger recently, put them together. They both look like that, you know, that old uncle that you have, that's that dirty uncle that's visiting you. But Lex Luger's turned his life around. You know, I think he's even done some stuff with the WWF. The only cloud would be on what all the stuff that happened with Miz. But I listened. Have you ever listened to the interview he did with Russo when he really talks about that night and what all happened?
No, I need to check that out, though.
Yeah, I would check that out. I mean, because I've always heard a lot of stories, but then, you know, the accounting he gave of it, and I think it was maybe Bischoff that I had heard that was talking about it. Bischoff had said that, you know, he was still kind of mad at Luger, and then, but after listening, he said, you know, Lex is really a changed person now, and is giving back and really trying to help people, and he's a changed person, but. I mean, I think if you're going to have a Coco Beware in there, you know, I'm not throwing Coco under the bus, or, you know, even some of the other guys you have on there. You know, if you're going to have Carlos Colon, who, you know, we could do a whole topic about why is he a Hall of Famer, you know, why not Lex Luger? I mean, he was one of the biggest guys in the 90s, late 80s.
On the topic of Hall of Fame, I read just a few hours ago, I don't know if it's true or not, but they are building an actual physical Hall of Fame, finally. It'd be cool if they do.
I think that would be fantastic if they had an actual physical Hall of Fame you can visit. I mean, Luger should be in the Hall of Fame. I think Liz should be in the Hall of Fame. You know, Macho's in there. I mean, I almost wish they would have put Liz and Macho in together. I think that would have been pretty cool. I think the Luger story, you know, you talk about Dark Side of the Ring. That would be a great Dark Side of the Ring episode.
I think we need to do a feature on Luger before they get to it. Maybe Slop Drop beat them to it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think there's so much that you can break down. And it's just fascinating. You know, even look at, like, what happened with him in the WWF. You know, he has a Lex Express, but he never wins the belt.
He checked all the boxes that Vince McMahon loves. He had the look.
But, I mean, why didn't Vince put the belt on him? And, you know, then the things that he did with the Monday Night Wars coming in there and battling the NWO in 97, Luger was freaking hot. You know, watch that 100th episode of Monday Nitro where Luger beats Hogan for the title, and the way that that crowd popped, the way that I popped, I was pumped for a week. Of course, Hogan said, "That didn't work for me, brother," and he gets the belt back in less than 7 days. But, I mean, that was a moment, and he was hot. he kind of got awkward when he did the whole Wolfpack thing. You know, he would come out and like try to be cool, and I don't know, just, you know, you got Nash being so cool, you know, and, you know, really relaxed. And then you got Luger, you know, I don't know, when he would do the do sweet stuff, it would just come off very awkward. But definitely, man, Hall of Famer, definitely.
Next, we see a vignette of why Sid Vicious and Kevin Nash are in a powerbomb match. The first one to powerbomb their opponent wins the match. This was their first one-on-one pay-per-view match since WWF In Your House 2 from 1995. Nash defeated Sid Vicious after he duped the ref into believing he had powerbombed Sid. The ref got bumped, and Sid hit Nash with a powerbomb, the rightful winner. Referee didn't see it, of course. Jeff Jarrett comes out, blasted Sid with a guitar. Nash unable to powerbomb Sid, but again, somehow convinced the ref that he did and wins.
Telling the referee he powerbombed him. Well, that didn't happen. It worked. I've never seen this happen in my life.
It worked.
Yeah, it worked. But the referee has raised the hand of Kevin Nash, who never even put a powerbomb on the man. It worked.
Poor booking.
I mean, this... I'm sorry, when you say Nash and Sid, I think about the segment they did where, you know, Nash dressed up as Sid, and we talked about half the brain. And, you know, anyone watching this, again, I know I'm sending a lot of people to YouTube, go and look up Half the Brain, Sid Vicious.
Half the brain, you did.
I mean, that was... Unfortunately, that just distracts everything. I mean, I, this match, I mean, think about what that could have been. I mean, like, if this was in the WWF, they would have made money off that. Yeah. And that would have been huge, the build-up to it. You know, you got a WWF, two former WWF champions, and then they'll both be WCW champions. You know, why have a powerbomb match? You know, get something behind it. You know, put, you know, more of the story instead of, hey, let's just see who has the biggest powerbomb. But... yeah, check out that interview.
Backstage, Mike Snay interviewed Chris Benoit, who said that nobody had answered his open challenge yet, but once they did, they'd find out what Silent But Violent was all about. Jeff Jarrett then came out and answered the challenge.
Earlier tonight, you made the open challenge to anyone here in the locker room area to face you for the U.S. title in a ladder match. Canadian Crippler, it's match time. Who's your opponent going to be?
Mike, the invitation is still open for anyone that wants to fight for the pride, prestige, and notoriety of wearing the U.S. heavyweight title. But they're going to have to go through the Crippler. And they go through the Crippler, they're going to find out what Silent But Violent is all about.
Cut my damn music!
I agree with that. And he's mean.
I'll tell you what, Slap Nuts. I've already kicked one ass tonight. I might as well make it two.
Actually, it'll be three.
Yeah, that's it.
Crippler my ass. When I get done with you and I scale this ladder and get that damn belt, you're going to be the one crippled and handicapped. Let's get to it, punk.
12th match of the night, Chris Benoit defeated Jeff Jarrett by pinfall after a flying headbutt off the top of the ladder to earn the U.S. title.
Wait a minute. He's not going for the belt. He's going to drop on it.
Oh! Air Canada from the top of the ladder. A standing ovation by the people here in D.C. What a move. That is an athlete. That is a professional wrestler. That's Chris Benoit. And that is a man who is about to become United States champion. And this is the match of the year.
This was a really cool spot, his flying headbutt. It was a cool camera shot. But Harley Race, who made it, he made this move popular. He's came out before he passed away and warned wrestlers, don't do this move. Knowing what we know now about CTE, about the long-term effects this had on Harley Race, the Dynamite Kid, he used this move. It had horrible effects on him. Daniel Bryan, it's injured him. And think about it, Chris Benoit, we know – you know, his tragic story. So knowing that, I look at it a little bit differently. At first, I see the shot. I see him coming off the ladder. I thought it was cool. But, you know, you think about all that stuff, and I don't know. Maybe that's something that they need to outlaw.
I think any move like that, you need to. I know we were all big fans of Benoit back in the day because his matches seemed so realistic. Because they were literally beating the tar out of each other. I mean, pretty bad. And Benoit, that move, that headbutt, yeah, I used to pop for that. I was like, oh, that's a sweet move. But knowing, you know, then less than 10 years later, he's got the brain of an 85-year-old man and what ended up happening with that, it's very tragic. And, you know, Benoit, though, I mean, he is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. Unfortunately, his career is always going to be marred for what he did the last couple of days of his life. And that's just something you really, you can't forgive what he did those last few days of his life. And, you know, Jarrett, you know, you don't just have one match with Jarrett. You got to have two Jeff Jarrett matches. That equals money.
I correct myself. I think I said Benoit won by pinfall. He didn't. He climbed the ladder and grabbed the title from the hook there. Backstage, Mike Tenay interviewed Bret the Hitman Hart, who cut a great promo about proving his doubters would be wrong and being true to his word. He beat Bill Goldberg.
Bret Hart, this is the moment that we've all been waiting for. Next up, your WCW Championship match with Goldberg. Tonight, we find out who is the best.
Well, you know, I'm a man of my word, and I said in this match that no matter what happens, the Bill Goldberg is going to lose. Now, I'm going to prove, because I haven't been able to prove this since I've become champion. And I've knew the second that I won the title that I was going to have to prove it against Bill Goldberg. So I'm going to prove it tonight to all the doubters, to all the skeptics. Tonight, I will walk out of that ring the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be, whether Bill Goldberg likes it or not.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight is the final WCW Starrcade of the 20th century. Tonight, we will find out who will lead us into the new millennium as the undisputed WCW World Heavyweight Champion. Tonight, we find out who will be the best. Are we ready? WCW fans, are we ready? From the capital city of the United States of America, Washington, District Columbia, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to rumble!
Main event time, the 13th match of the night. Yes, there's 13 matches on this card. Bret Hart defeated Goldberg to retain the world title in a no DQ match. Goldberg was busted open due to headbutting his door prior to his ring entrance. You know, some things never change, I guess. During the match, Bret Hart gets a concussion. Some believe it happened when Bret was hit his back of his head on the concrete floor trying to get Goldberg in that figure four around the ring post. Bret said it actually happened when Goldberg gave him a sidekick to the head. Either way, that's pretty much ended. It did end Bret Hart's career. Here by Goldberg, Rowdy Roddy Piper comes out in a referee shirt, since all the other referees had been knocked out by this time. Bret barely put Goldberg in the sharpshooter, and immediately Piper calls for the bell.
Standing sidekick! It's been Goldberg's best offensive maneuver in about 7 or 8 minutes.
We don't have a referee, Tony.
Watch Goldberg, though. He's setting.
Third referee used. The third one has gone down.
Three seconds away from becoming champion of the world. That man right there, the man, Goldberg.
Oh, man, Roddy Piper, striped shirt. I didn't even know he was in the belt.
Bret Hart got Goldberg. He got him in the knee. Sharpshooter, put the sharpshooter on. Piper's calling the bell. What the?
Did he give up?
What is that? I don't know what he did.
Why did Piper call for the bell?
I don't know. He walked in. He put him in the shoulder.
Even though 2 years had gone by, Russo is still milking the Montreal Screwjob.
Well, then Russo would try to milk it in TNA. He had an angle with Kurt Angle where they tried to do it. I think they called it the Orlando Screwjob. So, yeah, I mean, going back to the well, I mean, it was almost 2 years to the day that, you know, that happened. You know, Bret the Hitman Hart, you know, I've been going back and watching WWF, some of the older stuff, and like right now I'm watching, I think it's like 96 Raws, and he's getting ready to have the Iron Man match with Shawn Michaels where I'm out there. And I'm really excited because when I get to the 97 Raws, seeing he was the hottest heel in the business in 97. Him and that whole group that he set up, you know, the Hart Foundation. And the Hart that was in this match was a shell of his former self. And I think it was tough on him because he didn't have a whole lot to work with. Bill Goldberg still can't work now. We saw the match that he had with The Undertaker last year where he pretty much almost tried to paralyze him. And which is funny because I watched Goldberg's interview and he's like, oh, yeah, he's got a receipt coming for me. I've been digging the stuff that Matt Riddle is, who's a legit and could put Goldberg to sleep in probably 30 seconds.
I know Matt Riddle has a goofy, unlikable character because it's so stupid and goofy, you know. But I think he could take Goldberg out in just a few seconds.
And honestly, you know, like they're kind of, you know, he's not afraid to talk smack because he knows he can back it up. And I would love to see maybe they put that feud, you know, if they do bring Goldberg back for a feud, put it in there and like, you know, let him legit shoot and let him put Goldberg to sleep in 10 seconds and see what happens then because he could. But I mean, Goldberg, you know, the year before this, the streak ended 98. And a lot of people say that is when WCW really started going down, but their ratings were still strong through the next 4 months after that. But, you know, Goldberg, after that initial run, and then after what happened with him losing, he just could never get the steam back. And, you know, like this match right here, why? It doesn't make sense to do that finish. You know, let Brett have a legit match with him. I mean, Brett could still carry him. Goldberg couldn't work more than 5 minutes, but Brett could carry anyone back in the day. And, I mean, I was really excited at this time when Brett got the title because I was like, hey, maybe he's going to be renewed. Hogan's not there running over everything, you know. It just never really, you know, he just never took off in WCW. A lot of it was, he was just totally misused. And Goldberg just couldn't work. I mean, he was just that beast. And like here, you know, it was like a 12-minute match. Let's do a technical match. You know, I think this would have been a good match to kind of build up like the Hogan and Warrior from WrestleMania 6. I mean, that match went almost over 20 minutes, and neither one of them could work. But, you know, Pat Patterson put that match together and made it such a great match. That's the difference. They didn't have a Pat Patterson in WCW to help create this match. Everyone's trying to protect each other. No one's going to lose clean. Unfortunately, it sounds a lot like the things going on in wrestling today.
Piper then takes the belt, starts to leave, and then Brett catches up with him. Piper hands him the belt, and then the show just ends. That was Starrcade 99. Many consider the worst Starrcade ever and the beginning of the end of WCW. Lots of gimmick matches, lots of stipulations, lots of ref bumps. So, you know, toward the end, they'd already went through all the referees. And lots of Jeff Jarrett and a whole lot of Vince Russo. Do you have a favorite match or segment?
Well, first of all, I have to say, at the end of this, if I would have paid for this pay-per-view, I would have been pissed. There was no finish. It's basically Piper's walking out with Bret Hart, and he hands him the belt. I mean, I would be pissed. And it was a piss poor card. Honestly, I don't have a favorite match because it was all crap. And it was the beginning. I love WCW. And to me, this was hard to watch. I went back and I watched all the Starrcades. And, you know, you start with like 83, you know, you got a Flair for the Gold and, you know, some of the pay-per-views that built up, you know, and then seeing this, man, I mean, this was just historically bad. And I felt like everyone was just mailing it in. They didn't care. They're like, hey, let me get my check. Let me pick up my check on Monday.
I would probably go with Benoit and Jarrett as my favorite match of the card. I'm not saying it was great, but on this card, that was probably my favorite match. Eric Bischoff recently said, from bell to bell, this was the worst pay-per-view he'd ever seen.
Oh, I mean, it was almost like whoever was booking it at ADD, and because there's so much stuff going on. I mean, God, just when you were explaining some of the stuff, it was making my head hurt. It was just way too much, and it wasn't what WCW fans were used to, and that's why they revolted against it. And within, you know, in a couple months, it would just be just basically done.
Russo would blame standards and practices for his inability to write better shows. What do you give it, a thumbs up, thumbs down, or thumbs in the middle?
Well, it's not even close. This is a huge thumbs down and the beginning of the end for WCW. But, I mean, you know, all the guys, look at the roster you named off during this. I mean, could you imagine the companies now? They would kill to have a roster like this. And that's all you can put out there? That's sad.
Well, this is what Twitter chose for us. We gave them the choice of WWF In Your House 5 from December 1995, In Your House 12 from December 1996, and Starrcade 99. 53% voted for this, so we did it. Next week, man, second annual Sloppy Awards. I've got mixed emotions about this. We try to stay positive. I know probably can't tell it from this episode, but this was not a good show. For the most part, we try to stay positive. We don't trash anybody. But this is the one time a year, in the spirit of Festivus, thanks to Seinfeld, George Costanza, the airing of grievances. So we let our people vote on their least favorite of the year. And we have 13 categories, and I know the results. So we will see next week everybody's least favorite of 2020.
I had to laugh because you said you had 13 categories. Honestly, we could have done a sloppies on this show, because it was 13, basically a dump getting taken 13 times in a row is kind of how it felt. But I hated to sound so negative on this show. It's just, I love WCW, man. I really enjoyed it back in the day, and it was painful. And
I feel you.
You know, I mean, and then you're going to diss JR and all this kind of stuff on it. I mean, which I do got to throw another shout out, JR's Barbecue. Check it out, man. I'm telling you, that seasoning they got, it's like $4 a thing. It's epic.
That about wraps it up. Follow us on Facebook at The Slop Drop, on Twitter at The Slop Drop 1. Wherever you get your podcast, we're probably there. Leave us a good rating, a good review. Doesn't cost you a penny, but it helps us a lot. And as always, thank you for listening. And until next time, we're out of here.
And hey, we danced with the Rona and we took it down because we laid the smackdown on it. So now 90 days free, baby. Woo!
Goodbye and good night.
1, 2, 3.